Okay, every Yom Tov has its unique experiences, its historical correlatives. But Shavuos is an opportunity beyond just reliving the history and the event, but to try to bridge between the ideal and the reality. What do I mean to bridge between the ideal and the reality? Here are some sheets. In an ideal world, we have no responsibilities, no wars, no illnesses, no need to earn a living. So we can learn Torah all day. And that's how the Rambam describes Olam Haba. Chachamim yoshvim v'atrosem v'rasheim v'nenim yizev ha'shchina. Now whether we'll be sitting over a ketzos ha'choshen and a tosfos or some other way of interacting with Hashem's ratzon, but nothing from this world will extend to the next world. We won't be disturbed or distracted by anything, and we'll be solely focused and pivoted on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Take the following jarring example just to help you appreciate how deeply immersed you'll be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The following two, okay? Two examples, about one about Schar Ve'onesh and one about how transient human experiences are when held to the eye of eternity. Who gets more Schar Tal? You or the Vilna Gaon? Assuming you maximize your life. Let's say you learn every minute. The Vilna Gaon maybe was about 20 minutes in his whole life, you once remember. Let's say you replicate that, but you don't become the Vilna Gaon. You can't, neither can I. Who gets more Schar? So everyone in this room will say, of course, because we're all trained in the Western world, get the same schar, put forth the same effort, same output, same A for effort. Everyone gets an award at the end of the soccer match because everyone tried it. Everyone's a winner. Objectively, that's fraudulent. The Vilna Gaon gets so much closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than any of us in this room will ever, even if we perform at the same output and exertion as the Vilna Gaon. But on the other hand, if the Vilna Gaon gets more schar in Olam Haba, then is it fair? Because none of us were created with the potential of the Vilna Gaon. So that's an age-old question. Far, far before I inhabited this earth. But one answer, and I think to me the most powerful answer is that the Vilna Gaon will objectively receive more schar. But it won't make a difference. Because you'll have the max that you're able to handle. And you'll be so attuned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so entrenched into that relationship, that you won't even have the ability to look to your right and to your left. It won't bother you. The Vilna Gaon having more is only unfair if you're bothered by it. But if you have an endless supply of what you need, and you're not, so A, objectively you have as much as you need and can process, and B, you're not bothered, you're not pained by that fact because you're so tuned in and synchronized with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let me say it a different way, okay? I know that when people die, we often use the expression, we'll be together in Shemayim, and we'll live together, and we'll celebrate together. Well, that's obviously not true. At least in the way that we process our human relationships. You're not going to be your parents' children in Shemayim. You think you will, so who's going to be your grandparents' children? If your parents are the father of the family, then who's going to be the children of your grandparents? So obviously, in the human realm, we go through relationships and we play different roles at different stages. We're children, then we're parents, then we're grandparents. So we occupy different roles. In Olam Haba, we can't. So you're not really going to have the same human relationships, man and wife, father and child, we have in this world, even in a spiritual, emotional level. It says we won't need it. We'll be so engrossed, take a sheet, take it. We'll be so engrossed with Rabboni Shalom that we won't need those types of relationships. We can't think about it now because as human beings, we're so dependent in a healthy way. It's not like a dependency that we're frail. Hashem wants us to have those interactions. But could you imagine a world in which you won't need them and they'll be meaningless and it's hard for you to even process because they're so meaningful in our reality. So the ideal is to sit and learn Torah all day. But look at the world we live in and look how much meager time is available to us. So the answer is, do we have the thirst and the hunger? Do we tell ourselves, Shifti v'veis Hashem ko yemei chayei is a dream and maybe we can't fulfill the ko yemei chayei? And then on a daily basis, whatever time we can, we try to gather as much Torah time as we can. So the Gemara says in Bracha, source number 5, Maragala b'pumid rabbanan d'yavna, when the great rabbis assemble in Yavna, they used to repeat this mantra, Ani Beria, very important statement. Because on the one hand, Torah learners have to feel special. If you don't feel special, that pride won't appreciate your station, your calling, how royal it is, how nobling it is to study Torah. People use words about Torah studiers that are very, very denigrating. Leeches, parasites, insular, insensitive. Baruch Hashem, I think our yeshiva, through its various, and yeshivas like it, through its various exposures, is able to change some of that terminology and some of that vernacular. I've told you so often, wherever you are, you have to wear the fact that you're an Oved Hashem, that you're a yeshiva bachar the right way. Because there's so many people today whose religion was ruined by that one meeting 20 years ago, 30 years ago, with that wrong rabbi at the wrong time who said something rude or bigoted or insensitive or pompous or whatever. And unfairly, they judge Judaism by Jews, because it's never the way to judge a religion by people. People are frail. People make mistakes. But that soured them, unjustifiably, but that soured them. And I don't want anyone to be soured in your account. If anything, you have to provide a refreshing, noble view of what a Ben Torah can be. So, just a second. So, on the one hand, you have to feel that pride. On the other hand, it can't be condescension. Can't be dismissiveness towards other people who aren't learning Torah. It's a very, very fine line. In some communities, there isn't enough Kavanah Torah. Aren't enough people? How many of your parents would be happy if you came home and told them you're going to be a Rebbe? That's a sad comment. Because we as a community don't value people becoming Rabbanim and teachers. And at some level, you could explain it a thousand different ways. At some level, that's a blemish. It's a scarlet letter in our community. If we really value Torah, then we would value, with all the understandings that it's a difficult life and a challenging life, and if your parents say, wow, that's fantastic. It's a dream come true for me, for my son, to be teaching Torah. But are you fit for it? Can you afford it? I mean, that's a more subtle conversation, which on the one hand demonstrates real belief and evaluation of this, but on the other hand, real-time concerns and pragmatic concerns without being naive about the realities. But in some cases, it's just taboo. In some cases, it would be the greatest tragedy because you're not fulfilling your destiny. In some cases, the Kavanah Torah is too excessive. Well, people that are learning, they're the princes of the world. Their lives matter. People that are not learning, their lives are inferior, in some cases meaningless. It's very important as Shavuos looms, try to find that calibration. So this is how the people in Yavne calibrated it. Ani Beri, Yavachaveri Beri, were both creatures of Hashem, source 5. Ani Malachti Be'ir, I go to work every day in the city. V'umalachto Basada. Sometimes you find that people that are learning Torah, it kills me, especially in this yeshiva, especially with Israelis, I'll be honest, because you're not in that framework. But when a boy is an Israeli, and I mean, you should think of yourself that way also for the year you're here. I mean, I know, and you can ask your friends what their schedule's like in the army. In the army, you're not waking up at 7:40 and going to the local minyan and relaxing a little, having some coffee and resting in the afternoon and watching movies at night. Working and working and working. Your time isn't yours. You grab a few minutes here. You grab a few minutes there to daven. Again, you can't recreate army life and the disciplined regimen of army life outside. But this laissez-faire, relaxed attitude, as if this is a hotel and you're here to enjoy yourselves and learn. I'm not piling on everyone here. I'm just describing what frustrates me. Not from a religious standpoint, simply from a moral standpoint. Go to the army. Friends of yours that are your age are there for 3 years. And they are living this type of schedule and this type of routine for 3 years. So you are reducing and diminishing that for the sake of Torah. You should at least work somehow in a manner that resembles. It's not army. You're not going to sleep 4 hours a night. You can't maintain that in yeshiva. But this relaxed, I'll learn when it suits me and I'm not feeling well today, so I'll take it easy today and I need a little bit more sleep. I think under the moral considerations and framework of yeshiva like this, I just don't know how people can allow. Forget religious. Forget the fact, as Rav Aaron said, you're wasting HaKadosh Baruch Hu's potential. Rav Aaron felt, if you're lazy, you're almost betraying Hashem. Hashem gave you power. Hashem gave you potential. Hashem gave you resources, and you just squander it. You just don't use it. It's like almost betrayal of someone who invested in you. So they went to work. He's going to work in the field, and I work in the city. Ani mashkim limlachti, line number 2. I get up early. Who mashkim limlachto? He gets up early. Kishem shehu eno miskader b'melachti, just like he doesn't deride or devalue my work to learn Torah. Kach ani eni miskader b'melachto. I don't deride his value. He's working in the fields. He's a farmer. He's a professional. Shema tomar, maybe you'll say, ani marbe b'humamit. I learn large volumes of Torah, and he learns small slices of Torah. So this is what they would say. Shaninu, echad hamarbe, v'yechad hamamit, uvilvach yichavin libu l'shamayim. Some learn more, some learn less. People choose different lifestyles, as long as it's lishma. And as long as the people that learn more don't look in a manner that's condescending and supercilious to those who learn less, As long as those silver and less are able to scramble together as much as they can. It's an important phrase to remember. Keep in mind the common denominator, and I say this again and again and again until it gets to people's heads, because it doesn't always in a yeshiva, especially where there's so many values on display. You have to learn Torah, or else you're not an Orthodox Jew. You can't wake up in 5 years from now and say, keep kashrus and Shabbos, but I don't learn Torah. You're an Orthodox Mel Yechayiv and Talmud Torah. Forget Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. Forget Yom HaValayla. This is an important corrective that you're constantly going to have to go through in life. Am I learning Torah B'Kvius? How much? Go back to the Gemara and Bracha. Echad Amar Rav, Echad Amamit. Some are going to learn 10 hours. Some are going to learn, I don't know, 20 minutes, 10 minutes. Right? There's no way to put a figure on it. But just to live a life without coming into contact with the direct word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not just books about Judaism or why you Torah Shirim from famous rabbi. None of that. Simply contact with Hashem's Ratzon. Mishnah, Rashi, Pasuk. So many layers. Everyone in this room now has access. Can't say can't learn. You all have the skills to get that access into Torah. So Shavuos is a time to think about the offset between what we'd like and what we have, and to assess how we're doing. Rav Aaron would always tell us, Erev Shavuos, we have to conduct a Cheshbon HaNefesh on Erev Shavuos about our Torah fidelity and our Torah fitness, the same way on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. We conduct a Cheshbon HaNefesh about our overall behavior. So he would give us Sichot about how to process our Torah personality and our Torah experience. I summarized one on a shiur the other day on Wayu Torah, which I uploaded to Wayu Torah. And I want to tell you the story just to set the framework right for what you hope to accomplish on Shavuos. Again, this is a different type of a year, because this is a year in which you're learning all day long the entire year. But condition yourself, think about this Gemara. There'll be times in the future where this bridge between your full year reality, and of course, in future years it becomes even more difficult. When you're in yeshiva, you feel Shavuos. In other years, you may not feel Shavuos. You'll be in college campuses, you'll be a professional, and you're going to have to find the strength. I mean, to me, it would be almost a no-brainer that for the rest of your life you stay up all night on Shavuos. I mean, that's just the minimum that someone that has Torah sensitivities can do. Now, if you're going to tell me that you're going to be very, very conscientious and by sleeping Shavuos night you're not going to be able to learn the next day, but you're going to wake up, like there's some people that don't stay up Shavuos night because they want, and they hold, there's some people that follow the minhag of Chatzi L'Hashem and Chatzi L'Chem literally. So they learn till 3 o'clock and then, no, seriously, there are many people that do that. They spend Yontif half the time in shul and learning, and half the time they time it till chatzos, till 1 o'clock. And then some people say that by staying up late at night, you may ruin or alter some of those capabilities. So if you feel you're going to... Do you guys even know that in some yeshivas in America, I'm sure there are other yeshivas around the world, obviously not in Israel, people do a tikkun the second night? Are you even aware of it? If you'll have a tikkun the second night, because why is it less shavuos? Why should we be less interested in Talmud Torah? So I don't think you should do a tikkun the second night. I think you should enjoy Yontif. If you're going to obviously waste your time. But there's something to be said. Even if you put your head down to sleep a little bit, the rest of your life, sometimes I don't make it through the whole night. But just the feeling that we're being mekabel Torah, we're staying up at night to be mekabel Pnei Hashem. And again, if you feel, obviously if your wife wants to daven and you want to go to sleep early so you can babysit the next morning, or you're on call, there are many ways you can do mitzvahs by not staying up at night. But all things being equal, don't just say, I'm tired, I'll go to sleep. I'll go to a shir for an hour, have some cheesecake and go to sleep. I think your ability to express on Shavuos what your desire should be the whole year, but unable to achieve, but on Shavuos. So let's take a look at this story. The Gemara Chagiga says, Rav Iti was the father of Rav Yaakov. Rav Yaakov was a Talmud Chacham. Rav Iti was a businessman. So Rav Yaakov would spend all year in the Beis Medrash, and Rav Iti would go on these long business trips and come every 3 months for a day. Pop in when, between flights. So all the Talmidei Chachamim in the Beis Medrash started to disparage Rav Iti. We're here learning all 3 months and you just pop in for a day. So what did they call him? Line number two, source four, Havikari Lu Rabbanan. The Rabbanan would name him a very, very very denigratory nickname. Bar Beirav Dechad Yoma. He's someone that comes for a day, a one-night stand. He shows up for a day. We're here learning, schwitzing, working. He shows up for a day. Rav Yochanan is very upset. Rabbi Yochanan says, "B'matusa minach, lo tanish l'rabbanan." Don't stop this. Nafik Rabbi Yochanan the baby drasha v'darish. So they get up and to defend Rav Iti. He gave the following drasha. He quoted a pasuk in Yirmiyah. Pasuk says, "V'oti yom yom yidroshu." They will pursue me every day, yom yom. So this was Rabbi Yochanan's drasha. V'chiba yom yidroshim v'layla in droshim. What does it mean, yom yom? During the day, we pursue Hashem, and at night, we don't learn Torah. It's a Torah-free zone. What does it mean, yom yom yidroshim? Elalom melech, line number 5, source 4. Kol ha'osek b'Torah afilu yom echad b'shana. If you learn Torah one day a year, ma'ala lav ha'kasav kilo asak kol ha'shana kulo. It's like you learn Torah the whole year. I can't think of a Gemara that's more appropriate for Shavuos than this. How many people unfortunately don't learn Torah the whole year? Or don't learn enough Torah the whole year? Some by neglect, some by just simply inability, legitimate inability. And then Shavuos is at one time of year, we can say, okay, this is the way life should be. And by investing in Shavuos and in Matan Torah, I can demonstrate this is what I would perform uninhibited by the challenges of this world, but now I've got to go back to the world. But if you never had that day, then you may be lying to yourself. Maybe delusional. I really, really believe in Torah, but. When you have that one day to just break away. So that's what I think you should look at before I get to details about Shavuos, how you should process Shavuos, and what Shavuos means in Matan Torah. Just start training yourself. Again, it's a little bit of a mirage because yeshiva, Shavuos doesn't really feel that different from the rest of the year. And especially here in Eretz Yisrael, where Shavuos starts very, very late, so by the time you get to the Beis Medrash, it's 12 o'clock, and Ratigan's 4 o'clock, so you have an extra shiur, and it's not really that much different. But start processing in your mind, especially because Shavuos doesn't have any mitzvahs, so it's harder to latch onto. I'll talk about that in a moment, why Shavuos doesn't have any mitzvahs. We all know how Pirkei Avos begins. Moshe Kibbol Torah Misinai Misar Yeshua. Avos Rabbi Nasan, which I was learning with some of the boys before Pesach, begins in a very, very different tone, but it's important to think about this over the next couple days. Source number 3. Moshe niskadesh be'anan v'kibol Torah misinai. Moshe spends 6 days in a cloud, and then he receives Torah. Now, why we're seeing the cloud? So that's a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Akiva. Well, let's see. Actually, it's a little bit later. I'm Rabbi Nasan. Rabbi Nasan says, source 4, I'm sorry. Source 3, line 4. Mipnei ma nisakei Moshe kol sheshes yamim. Why do you spend 6 days in the cloud? To walk away from eating and drinking so that his system can be cleansed. According to Rabbi Masya ben Charash, not just physically, to cleanse himself, but attitudinally, to develop the orientation that this is something special. So here you've got two different opinions about what Moshe was doing for 6 days. And of course, they're complementary. Before I talk about the union of the two and the way that they complement each other, the common denominator is that you have to prepare for Har Sinai. As you have to prepare for any moment of expanded religious consciousness, Pesach, Yom Kippur, Purim, but Har Sinai in particular, because it's Devar Hashem, because to a degree there's an irony because we spend so long preparing for it that we almost forget that it happens. We spend 50 days preparing for Shavuos, but it's become so much part of our routine. Did you say spirit? Did you say spirit on our apps? And so all of a sudden, it's the 49th. All of a sudden you wake up and you say it's the 49th day and a couple of, it's really here. And then you realize, I haven't really been preparing for Shavuos. I've just been counting down the Omer, making sure I'm still in. I'm still making the bracha. And then you realize it's about Shavuos. So these little alarm clocks that have to go off in your head. Again, especially because a lot of the college routines that you'll be subjected to challenges. You'll be taking finals depending upon when the schedules work out. In some cases, it's summer. It's a bit leisurely. You don't have the mitzvos that anchor your life. Pesach, you can't miss. You're turning over your whole kitchen. You're buying matzah. You're buying food. You're preparing Torah for the Seder. You're cleaning chametz. Shani Yom Kippur, you can't miss it. It's in the air because there are concrete connectors to which you adhere. Shavuos is nothing. You have to prepare anything. Someone once said an old joke. It's a rude joke about Shavuos, but it displays a lot of reality. He once said, a Jewish comedian, that Shavuos is his favorite holiday. Why is Shavuos his favorite holiday? Because on Pesach, we can't eat what we want. On Sukkot, we can eat whatever we want, but not where we want. And on Rosh Hashanah, we can eat what we want and where we want, but not when we want because of the davening is so long. And Yom Kippur, you can't eat at all. Shavuos, you can eat whatever you want, wherever you want, whenever you want. It's his favorite holiday. Now, of course, we don't gauge holidays in Yom Tovim based on how much you can eat. But the fire behind the smoke is there's nothing limiting you on Shavuos. You can basically spend the whole day eating. In Israel, sadly enough, amongst Jews who aren't religious, it's become a day of nature, day of vacation. Get back to nature, return to your roots because of Bikurim. So you've got to have that period. This is why it's starting tonight. Shlosh Yisimei Hagbalah, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, when something happens. Technical advice, watch a little bit less YouTube if that's something. You can walk a little bit away from the food and drink like Moshe did. I mean, you should eat or drink less, but you're just all in a different state. Rav Masya says, think about religion a little bit more. Try to come to davening if you're not doing well in davening in the morning on time. Make sure your davening is, make sure your starim are kept. I would feel that the Isser Bittul Torah, as terrible as it is even worse when you're 3 days before Shavuos. Again, you don't have to be neurotic. You don't have to slam your chavrus over the head if he starts talking, but a certain reinforcement of boundaries and of parameters and of frameworks, as Moshe did for 6 days without eating, and also to put himself into that frame of mind of Ema, Yira, Reses, Vizea, to put himself into that attitude. Where are the mitzvahs of Shavuos? Why aren't there mitzvahs? Two reasons. First of all, because as much as this is a day of Shemayim, as much as this is a day of divine voices and fear and thunder and lightning and billowing smoke, Hashem can't enforce or compel us to take the Torah. The most he can do is offer. It's a bilateral experience. He can offer it to us, but we have to say yes. And that's why it can't be a day of mitzvahs, because mitzvahs is Hashem's legislation and mandates. And Hashem would say, I can't mandate anything. You have to accept my Torah. In Pesach, Hashem swept down to history and re-landscaped the entire world unilaterally. We didn't have any voice or role in it. So Hashem could say, these are the mitzvahs. And Rosh Hashanah, Hashem judges Basar Vadam with full authority. So he says, these are the mitzvahs. Shavuos Hashem, it's not Yom Nesina Satara. That's not how we'll call it in Davening. We'll call it Yom Matan Tar. Hashem extends an option to us. Remember the Medrash? The fascinating Medrash that everyone gets wrong. Hashem hoisted the mountain and he threatened us to accept the Torah. And he said, if you don't accept the Torah, I'll bury you. Yeah. Why does Hashem have to do that? Let him just force the Torah on us. Why does he have to threaten us? It's like I squeeze your hand until you cry uncle. I need you to say uncle. I need you to say yes. I torture you until you say yes. But I still need you to say yes. It's your yes that will make you. I can't do it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't give Torah to human beings because we have freedom of will. And we can hold out. He can punish us. He can make us suffer. He can demolish our body. He can't take away free will from human beings once it was delivered. And for 2,000 years, man exercised his free will in a way that was discrepant with Hashem's will. And finally, one community accepted the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it can't be a unilateral day. It can't be a day of commandments. We make the day. It's our day. And that's why, to a degree, the irony is, I told you before, there's a machlokas about how you should experience Yom Tov between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. We can read it together, source number 10. Rabbi Eliezer, one of the shita says, one shita is chatzi l'shem, chatzi l'chem, is Rabbi Eliezer's shita. Rabbi Yoshua's shita is, you have a choice. You can enjoy all day or you can fast all day and learn all day. In fact, unbeknownst to you, many of your great-grandparents fasted Rosh Hashanah, 2 days. Rosh Hashanah was a day which many people would fast as the Yom HaDin. They would eat at night and fast during the day. So in Yom Tov, you have that option. You can't on Shabbos, but in Yom Tov, you have the option to fast. But the Gemara says, source number 10, Amar Rabbi Elazar, HaKol Modim, even those that allow you to fast on Pesach and Sukkot, HaKol Modim de Be'atzeres, Bein anami lachem. What? You have to eat on Shavuos. When you take that second piece of cheesecake at your guests at your host's house, say, my Rebbe told me I have to eat on Shavuos. It's my Rebbe's fault. It's so antithetical. It's so counterintuitive. What would be the one of the 3 days that you should be able to fast? Shavuos, it's a day of spirituality. It's a day of Torah. No. It's our day. It's the day that we make, and we have to process and navigate it through human experiences, not just through fasting and spirituality. We have to eat on Shavuot because it's a day that we create and a day that lifts us and ennobles us. Look at the end of Source 10. Rabbi Yosef would tell his servant, his chef, Erev Shavuos. Rabbi Yosef, Biyoma de'atzarta. Erev Shavuos would tell his chef, or maybe Shavuos proper because the chef could cook, Amti li igla tilsa. I want you to prepare the choicest meat. Their choicest meat was the third offspring of a cow, the third egg born, igla tilsa. Why? Amar, fascinating. Rabbi Yosef, who probably went by the name Joe, not really, but we would call him Joe. Rabbi Yosef said, Eli Hayoma, if not for Shavuos, Kama Yosef Ika Bashuka. I'd just be an average Joe. There are many Yosefs in the Shuk. This is my day. Kiyam Chayeinu. What separates me? What makes me a Machas Kohanim B'Gai Kadosh? What gives me meaning in this life? Torah. So, because I'm so proud to have accepted Hashem's Torah, I have to enjoy it through human expression. Not just through spirituality, not just through fasting, not just through davening. So one of the reasons there's no mitzvahs today is because too many mitzvahs would be a legislative mandate feel rather than we're creating the day because we want it. Because we realize the inherent value of Hashem's will and a lifestyle built on Hashem's will. If we're choosing it. And because of that, we're celebrating in a human fashion. That's why there's no mitzvahs. Second reason there's no mitzvahs. If you can believe it, because the day has to be cleared out for something even more surpassing than mitzvahs. What could be more surpassing than mitzvahs? There's only one thing. It's a four-letter word and it starts with Torah. Torah. In Hebrew. As important as mitzvahs are, and in this world, Torah and mitzvahs are wedded. A person that learns Torah without intent to perform mitzvahs, he's not even learning Torah. You don't even make a bracha. It's not considered Torah. It's so corrupt. It's so perverse. Mitzvahs are limited to this world. Human beings perform mitzvahs, malachim don't. Human beings perform mitzvahs in olam hazeh. There are no mitzvahs in olam haba, zero, nothing. No tefillin, no lulav, no tzitzis, no sukkah, no matzah, no chesed, no tzedakah, no bodies, nothing. There's one thing that's eternal. There's one thing that preceded this world. There's one thing that will outlast this world. It's the only thing that you're tasting in this world that will carry over into the next world. It's Talmud Torah. And that's why Torah has to be liberated from mitzvahs. It can't be a day of mitzvahs because Hashem wants your imagination to soar higher than mitzvahs. Not chas v'chalila, to the abnegation of mitzvahs, you know, like a bracha, you know, but your focus, your experience should be, wow, I get to learn Hashem's ratzah. Hashem b'charbanu mikolam yin b'nasam lanu astarasa. Hashem chose us to receive His will. And of course, to implement His will as long as we live. And then when we die, we'll still live His will, we'll still think about His will, we'll still know Him, we just won't be able to perform it any longer in a physical manner, but we'll still be engaged in understanding His will. That's why, I mean, think of the Gemara in Shabbos, very famous Gemara, just so you should know, the Gemara, source 11. Darash Rav Simai, the last source. Bishan Shekarish Baruch Hu, when Am Yisrael responded to Hashem, Shekdimu Nasa L'Nishma, and we said Nasa before Nishma, each person received 60 times 10, 600,000 angels descended on each person. It's hard for us to know. I've never met one angel. I can't imagine what a swarm of 600,000 would feel like. And they placed two crowns on each person's head. Why do they receive two crowns? Because they placed Nasa before Nishma. Famous, famous question of the Beis Halevi. You all know who the Beis Halevi was? Beis Halevi was the father of Reb Chaim, the first Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. Asks a very famous question. Why did they receive two crowns? They should receive one crown. Because they did one incredibly bold and imaginative act of a blind leap of faith. They should have said, let's study, let's consider, let's learn about it, let's take a little while to think about it, and then we'll make a decision. Instead, they said, let's pull the trigger, follow your gut, and we'll work through it. By the way, a very important lesson, not just about faith and theology, but about life. Some people never reach the capacity to make decisions of faith. They're always looking for decisions of empiricism. How do I know? And there are some decisions in life that just don't lend themselves to empirical decisions, and people become paralyzed through empiricism. Some decisions can. investments, insurance, finance. Some decisions, they're just, you can't empirically marry a woman. There's no way for you to know how that will turn out. It's simply impossible. And some people are so frightened that they're really stalled through many years of inability to make that commitment. Making Aliyah, there's no way you will know whether your Aliyah will be successful, because there are stories in which you're not successful. You just have to go with your heart. So it was an act of faith and passion. And of course, theologically, all religion starts with an act of faith and passion. That's our start, and then we try to develop it rationally. So she got one crown. That courage of introducing Nasa before Ishmael. Why do they get two crowns? The Beis HaLevi wants to know. So he says, there really are two magics here. There are two great feats. One is proactively committing before studying. But now the question is, if you already are committed to Hashem, why do you have to study at all? Once they said Nasa, why should they even say Nishma? Just say Nasa. The answer, he says, is they said, no, we still want to study your will. Not because we need to know how to behave. We've already committed. Just give us the marching orders, we'll perform. We want to study your will because we just want to know who you are. Are any of you going to write tefillin in your lives? Probably not. But you're sitting there assiduously studying the laws of writing tefillin. Do you need to know them? You go out and purchase tefillin from a sofer. You can buy ready-made tzitzis in the svarim store. Your kashrus could be farmed out to any one of a number of reputable kashrus organizations. Today, living Judaism is easy. It could be just serviced out. Unfortunately, that's what makes it so lethargic, and in some cases so dry, because you just don't have to be involved in religion. Everything is provided. You come, the food is kosher, and everything is supervised, and the tzitzis are made, and the tefillin are made, and it's convenient, and people don't have to commit to performing religion. But we don't just study Torah because we want to know practically how to perform. We study Torah because we want to understand the eternal word of Hashem, which surpasses time and place. That's why Harsinai was given in a desert, beyond space, beyond time. We don't even know when the Torah was given. Look in the Torah, you'd think something that important should be tagged. Yitzias Mitzrayim is tagged. We left on the 15th of Nisan. It's tagged. Entry into Eretz Yisrael is tagged when we enter the land. Harsinai has one big ambiguity. When did it happen? Not only is it ambiguous, but Hashem tells Moshe, you can decide, and Moshe added an extra day according to one position in the Gemara. He said, let's wait another day. Why is it so ambiguous? Because it's beyond time. And it's beyond space. Because it's eternal. Think of the space that you occupy. This is a really, really big world. But at some point, as you zoom outward, at some point, you hit the boundaries. This universe isn't infinite. It's bounded, but by large space and large finitude. And at some point, you hit the end of the universe. You'll never do it, but at some point, you could theoretically. Beyond the universe is Hashem. Hashem is to the universe what the universe is to you. Just like you're spaced and placed in the universe, the universe, that huge expanse of space, is pitched within Hashem's presence. Within Hashem's collective. And that's where we are for Shavuos. Trying to get beyond space. Think of time. We have time, we have sequence, we have events. For Hashem, it's all just a second. That's what we want to get to on Shavuos. We can't tag it happen here in a certain place. It's not limited to a certain place in time. So there are two reasons there are no mitzvahs on Shavuos. One is because we don't want to create a feel of being mandated from Shemayim. This is our day. We choose it. We make it. We decide when it is, at least symbolically, through Sefiras Omer. We count down to it. We're determining when Shavuos occurs. And remember, Sefiras Omer begins when we want it to begin, based on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So effectively, we're creating the entire mousetrap. We decide when Rosh Chodesh Nisan is, which in turn determines when Pesach is, which in turn determines when Sefira begins, which in turn determines when Shavuos is. So essentially, we're setting in motion the wheels that are determining and designating Shavuos, and there are no misses today because this is a day for a human voice, not for Hashem's voice, number one. Number two, because we don't want to be time-bound to the world of mitzvahs. We want to be eternal in the world of Torah. That's why there are no mitzvahs, not that we should eat all day. Okay? Think about the following. Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar. Very famous, famous Medrash. Source number, where is it? On the back. Vayichanu Bamidbar, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar. Rashi notes the offset between Vayachanu. They all arrived. Vayavo, Vayachanu, and Vayichan. So what does the famous Rashi say? Kishlechad Valeidachad. What does that mean? Ki yesh echad b'leiv echad. Well, it means two things. Beyond just the obvious, tolerance, understanding that people are different, learning to live with other people, avas Yisrael. When a person comes into contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in a true sense, and you realize the enormity of Hashem, then you have to walk away with that sense of inability to fully understand Hashem, or else you're just humanizing Hashem into your perspective. The mountain caused this recognition. Seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the Yam Suf, and then seeing Hashem at the mountain, even before Har Sinai began, had them realize, we can't get it all. There is no way for me to fully understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the only way for me to fully understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to imagine that someone else is seeing him in a way that I can't, because my mind is limited. And therefore, I have to ratify someone else's view of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not just because I'm a morally kind person who allows dogs to bark and allows children to dirty my house without getting angry. Take a field trip on Friday. Maybe you can, maybe you won't. Go to Mir. It'll look a little different. If you sit there for a few hours, I promise you it won't feel that different. You look past the coloration and the clothing, and it'll be the same thing. They're getting up and davening, 7 in the morning, having some breakfast, learning morning Seder, lunch. Pretty much the same as you're doing here. But then go to Breslov. Or Bells. It's going to feel a lot more different than Mir. Walking into Bells, in some ways, is more important than walking into Mir. Because you remind yourself that there's a way to see Hashem that you just can't get. That it's so far from your perspective because you're just getting a fractal particle of Hashem. That's all you can get. You can't get the whole system of Hashem. Hashem is beyond you. So Ve'ichan Shem Yisrael Neged Ahar is not just a moral precondition for them to receive Torah. They were getting along kindly with one another. They were compassionate. They were selfless. The community was. When they sense HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, all of a sudden the pettiness, the judgmentalism, the particleism fell away. He said, I can't see the entirety of Hashem. This person next to me must be seeing Hashem in a way that I can't. And it's just as valid as mine. So part of Kabbalah Satara is being placed into that condition where you realize I can't see all of Hashem. And then the next step is Avas Yisrael, realizing, well, there are people that see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in ways that I just can't and understand them in ways that I can. That's also as long as it coheres within the circle of mitzvot and Torah. But there are people who are putting on tefillin that feel very different about life and about all the values that I hold. So I think that one of the differences that I've picked up, at least with American students, I don't know if it's true with others, is that there's a lot of patriotic jingoism almost about your derech. This is the derech, and this is the way to serve Hashem in a very positive way. Because there's been an attempt over the last 15, 20 years to articulate what are the values we stand for, because I think people lost that compass. They weren't able to articulate them. But I think for a lot of boys, it translates into, and this is the derech, and if people don't abide by my derech, then they're just not serving Hashem, and they're not going to get to Olam Haba, and this is the only derech. Rather than saying, this is our derech. This is the way we serve our Kodesh Baruch Hu. This is our Masara. And being that you were raised more or less within this derech, this is a natural continuation of our derech. But if you decide you want to change your derech and find some other way to be an Oved Hashem, as long as it coheres with the Torah, mitzvahs, and the values, it's just as legitimate. And Har Sinai is the moment to feel that the next couple of days, Vayichan Shem Yisrael Neged Ahar. It's not just that they had solidarity and fraternity because they were kinder and softer. Hashem's presence had an impact on them. And the squabbling and pettiness. Every week in the Beis Medrash, the Kohanim would shift out and in on Shabbos. So the new Mishmar would come in on Shabbos, the old Mishmar would leave. There was a ceremony, there was a rite, by which the departing Mishmar would bestow a bracha on the incoming Mishmar. It's quoted in the Gemara Brachos, Yud Aleph. Basically, I don't have the Gemara in front of me. The bracha was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who inheres his presence into this building, should bless you, they told the incoming Kohanim, and you should reach shalom, peace, harmony, achva. Well, these were people who were just well-wishing the newcomers to live peacefully. No, they were saying, we've lived a week with Hashem. We're less petty. We get it. We have seen and appreciated diversity and variety because we've lived in the Beis HaMikdash and we realize we can't get Hashem. It's simply beyond the human capacity. We hope that will happen to you. We hope you'll get the enormity and the sweet of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So be careful when people in this world use the following word to you, or the words. This is the derech. This is the emes. At a certain point, it's almost a little avodah zarah. I wouldn't call it avodah zarah, chas v'shalom, in the halachic sense. But avodah zarah is an attempt to humanize Hashem. Now there's gross, legal, halachically forbidden forms of avodah zarah. Molten images, gods of Mount Olympus, oceans, seas, planets, things that I can touch and feel and relate to. That's real avodah zarah. And then there's metaphoric avodah zarah, where you shrink Hashem into what your mind can grasp. And you can't imagine that Hashem has parts of him and part of his essence, just can't get. That's why seeing Gedolim are so important, because you understand that something can be so enormous that no one person can comp it. So for example, the Rav. We have Taminim of the Rav who will swear, Rav Soloveitchik, that he learned Gemara, that's what he really cared about and studied. And the philosophy, he just, in his spare time in the bathroom, he did it to appease, just so he should have a doctorate, just so he should have some title. But he really didn't care that much about it. And there's some people who will say, the philosophy is really what interested him, and the learning was just as a front, they should be a Rosh Hashiva. And other debates about whom he was. And the answer is, it was all of them. But the students had limited capacity, so they were just able to appreciate and identify with the parts of their Rebbe that reflected who they were. And if someone just isn't philosophical by nature, then the Rebbe would seem to just be dabbling in philosophy, unconsciously without any interest. Or someone who wasn't interested in learning Gemara wasn't able to register the resonance of how important Gemara was to the Rebbe. So sometimes you have experiences or people, entities that are just so large and so many lights across the spectrum, then not every person can pick up each and every ray of light. Well, imagine that about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What made Har Sinai so powerful is that people were hearing different things. So the Marshal writes, I want to share this with you, because a little bit of Kabbalah is also good for Shavuos. The Marshal was Rav Shlomo Luria. And Rav Shlomo Luria lived in Lublin in the 16th century when Rav Yosef Cairo was writing the Beis Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch in Tzfat. 1550s. And Rabbi Yosef Cairo wanted to try to systematize and institutionalize halacha, that every sugya could be mathematically reduced to its conclusion, and there's a formulaic way to decide halacha based on what the Rambam said, what the Rush said, what the Rif said. And Rav Shlomo Luria said, no, Torah is too broad, Torah is too wild, Torah is too chaotic, Torah is too infinite. You can't shrink it and organize it, and institutionalize it, and halacha by number, and halacha by, and psak by color. Ultimately, the Shulchan Aruch was right, because we were 1,500 years into Galus, or 1,400 years into Galus, and the ideal, authentic way of Torah couldn't be sustained anymore. There were too many pressures living scattered across the globe. Jews were migrating after the Spanish Inquisition, so it's hard to maintain that. But in a perfect world, the Amshel Shlomo was right, the Marshal was right. You can't shrink Torah down to one approach that everyone has to follow. There could be different approaches, a different way to say Kiddush, a different way to say Havdalah, a different way to meet Matzah, a different way to take Lulav, a different way to daven. So the Amshel Shlomo, the Marshal, called the Sefer the Yamshel Shlomo. It's a sea. It's not a table that's neatly organized, like the Shulchan Aruch. It's a sea. So in his introduction to Baba Kama, he describes what happened in Har Sinai. Take a look at source number 6. How can there be Machloksin? How can there be multiple truths? How can something be Tameh or Tara? How can something be Chayav or Pater? Which is right? Which is wrong? Lo l'tmo, he says, Amachloksin b'richo kadeos. Don't be surprised or shocked when there's disputes. Zeh metameh, zeh metayer, zeh oser, zeh matir, zeh posel, zeh machshir. Kulam, line number 4. Divrei Elokim Chayim. Ki'ilu kibel kol chad mipi agavur mipi Moshe. HaMekubalim, this is how Mekubalim described what happened in Har Sinai. Kol HaNeshamos HaYibah Har Sinai, we were all there. Kiblu Derech Memtes Sinaris, there were 49 conduits coming from Shemayim, 49 different approaches, 49 different ways, each conduit was different.
V'hem sheva pam sheva, seven times seven. V'hem ha'kolos asher shamu v'lo ra'u, you heard different voices, but you couldn't understand all of them. You heard other people hearing things that you couldn't understand. V'kol Yisrael ra'u es ha'kolos, hein adeh asam eschalkos betzina, but you were aware that what you were receiving was the law. Kol echad, listen to this line, ra'a derech tzina ar-shola l'fiyas ha'gasa. Every person saw and understood and comprehended the Torah based on his conduit and his channel, based on his capacity. V'kibol kifi koach nishmas eliyona. How saintly and how pious your soul was. Zerachok mizel. Next page. Your comprehension levels, and not just your comprehension levels, but the angles and perspectives at which you understood this were distant. Achechad yagia l'tar, one person heard tar. Vesheni yagia l'kze achron l'tame. Another person heard tame. Vashli shili emtsas, and one person heard something in the middle. So don't think that our Sinai was a uniform experience. And so it was. So it continues. And just because someone has a different shita from yours doesn't mean that it isn't emes. And it's not the derech. I've said this a lot to the Americans, but I'll say it again because it's Erev Shavuos and because some of the boys here didn't hear it yet. These are the conditions to be legitimate, to be part of our Sinai. Divinity of Torah. You have to subscribe to the notion that every single letter was written by Hashem. Number two, the authority of Chazal. Chazal knew Torah very deeply. They didn't have Ruach HaKodesh in the sense of Nevuah, but they were divinely inspired, as well as masterfully controlling the types of knowledge that we just scramble to piece together. And we don't mock their authority. We don't repeal their statements simply because they become a little bit outworn historically. Some things are outworn, let's face it. And we'll change them when Mashiach comes and there's a Beis Din, but we can't. Kitnio should be changed. We can't. Yad Tavsheni Shogali should be changed. We can't. We don't have. So often people don't realize that Judaism is playing shorthanded. We're trying to judge Judaism in a failed or a limited frame. We don't have a Beis Din. We don't have a Melech. We don't have a Nevi'im. It's like trying to look at a team that's playing two players shorthanded and gauging how they're playing. It's a joke. They're not playing at full force. You know, their full repertoire of their full arsenal. We don't have a Beis Din. We don't have Yerushalayim. We don't have the Beis HaMikdash. You don't have tefillin all day. I mean, we're a pale shadow of what Yiddishkeit's meant to be. But we're born into this world. We just assume that this is the ideal. Because that's how people process the reality. They don't realize there should be another ideal, but this is the ideal that we have to make the most of, that we have to succeed best at. Yud Gimel Ikar, you have to believe in basically Mashiach, and basically Tchias HaMeisim, Hashem isn't physical, Moshe had Nevuah, the 13 animamins of the Rambam, more or less. And mitzvahs. You have to perform mitzvahs. As long as your derech to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu coheres within those four parameters, mitzvahs, divinity of Torah, authority of Chazal, and Yud Gimel Ikar, that's part of our Sinai. So find your derech, not the derech. And every year on Shavuos, remember that Har Sinai happened in stereo. It wasn't a monolithic, monotonic event. Everyone heard the same thing. And machloksin in a Gemara are not based on the deterioration of the Masar. It's based on the fact that there were multiple truths given in Har Sinai. And at a certain point, Yosef Kara said, we have to uniform halacha. Everyone has to follow halacha the same way, whether you live in Spain or Italy or France or... And then Ramal said, well, maybe let's keep a little bit of autonomy for those Jews who live in Ashkenazi lands. But the post-Shulchan Aruch world has convinced you that there's one way to do things, and we're just trying to find it, both in Ashkafa and in Halacha. There isn't. And our Sinai reminded us, and that's why they were unified, not because they were the same, because they were different, but they realized that only in their differences could they encompass the totality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So people mistake this Rashi, they were all unified, they were all the same, they weren't the same. But because they saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they were able to contextualize that their truth wasn't the only truth. We have, what's the time, 7? I'll tell you what. Since the next piece is a little bit too long, we'll stop here. Okay, the next piece is a little bit longer than 5 or 7 minutes. So the time that I take sometimes during the rest of the year, I'll give you back for Shavuos. Okay. I want to wish everyone here a Chag Shavuos Sameach. Unfortunately, I'll be in Hong Kong, so I'll be thinking of all of you. And very quick trip. I'll be back Tuesday morning in Mitzvah. I wish you had a Beis Din to repeal it, but I don't. So I have to keep a second day. But enjoy Yom Tov in Yeshiva. Enjoy the cheesecake. Enjoy the chicken. Enjoy staying up.